At first, we would pick up the airplanes at the factory and take them to the fields or to the embarkation points where they shipped them overseas. But later on, the WASP got into the training command where they were towing targets and flying the airplanes for navigators and bombardiers.
And then the navigators and the bombardiers get to practice.
Yeah.
What were the targets?
They were sleeve targets, like a windsock, you know, a big tubular thing that just stretched out there on a cable. And they were dragged along about 3,000 feet behind the aircraft.
And what was shooting at them?
Live bullets. Students.
In other planes?
That's why they dragged it out there 3,000 feet. Like one of the girls said, hey guys, I'm pulling the target. I'm not pushing it. Aimed at the wrong one.
What's that story?
They came back with stories of holes in the tail end of the plane. I don't know how often that happened because it was a long tow target.
Were they shooting from the ground or from other aircraft?
Both, yeah.
How did the pilots that got sent into combat feel about you guys stepping in?
I think that if they wanted to fly combat, they were probably happy. But if they'd rather stay there and tow targets, they thought we were putting them out of work, which was foolish. There weren't enough of us to do any damage that way. We had a few sore heads that claimed that we were taking their place, but most of the time we got along fine with them, you know.
The military flyers, did they have any problems with the idea that you could actually handle these aircraft? Because these weren't little commercial.
No, they were high-performance aircraft. They had their doubts, a lot of them, and expressed it from time to time, but I don't recall any time when anybody ever kept me from doing anything or made life miserable for me. We just had this one fella that was a sergeant. He was driving a Jeep, and he was going to take me out to the airplane, you know, load my baggage on and everything. He didn't have a whole lot to say until he asked me what I was flying. And I told him, and he got mad and started beating on the steering wheel. And I said, what's wrong? I thought maybe he'd gone to the wrong end of the field or something. And he said, you know, I've got over 10,000 hours flying for some airline. And he said, I tried to join up, and they wouldn't let me off my job. I got frozen in my job. And then I got drafted, and look what I'm doing, driving a Jeep. And I said, well, you know, if I quit tomorrow, would you be flying? He said, probably not. So that was the end of it. But that was the only time that anybody ever actually said anything to me about it. He got a raw deal. You know, what a waste for a guy with that much time.
Yeah, he had a reason to have a...
Yes, he had a reason.
It sounds like he was madder at the deal he got than he was at you, anyway.
I think so, yeah. He calmed right down.
Did you have to tow targets when you were...
I didn't, no. Towing those targets was a dangerous job. I think that was the most dangerous job that the WASPs had. First of all, they didn't have brand-new aircraft to use. They were old and not too well maintained. A lot of times they were flying them red-lined, which means there's something wrong that needs to be fixed. It could still be flown, but you have to watch out for this and that. If it was red-crossed, you didn't touch it. That meant it was grounded. But there were a lot of them that were red-lined, and they were blowing tires left and right, and oil leaks and things like that, so that was not fun. We had one girl that was killed, and what happened was her airplane was redlined because the canopy, once you got it closed, you had to have it open from the outside. You couldn't get it open yourself. Well, the engine quit on takeoff, and they went down. They crashed. It caught fire, and she couldn't get the canopy open. So that was kind of bad. But we had a group of girls about somewhere between 18 and 20 of them that learned how to fly the B-17, and that was a big one, four engines. Afterwards, they were flying for student navigators and bombardiers.
So did you have, like, a group of close friends in that crowd, or I mean, was everybody,
well,
I guess you were in
barracks? Well, when we were in training, we did, because we were all together. But then after we got out and started moving around, you didn't see too many people over and over again. You'd be with different people or you'd be by yourself. So they were pretty scattered.
Did you like that?
I liked being on my own. Didn't have anybody depending on me, and I wasn't depending on anybody else. Now, when we got to Farmingdale, that was the last place I was based. I was rooming with a girl, and we used to, on rainy days, we'd go over to New York City. It wasn't very far, and just play around. And
so where
that was about as close as I got to anybody.
What would be a typical mission?
First, we'd go over to the office and see if anything was posted, and it might tell us that we were leaving the next morning. And we would go to a factory somewhere.
How would you get there?
Military or transport. And sometimes on a bus, but very rarely. Usually we flew to the factory. Say it was in Buffalo. We would pick up an airplane there and maybe take it to Fort Dix, New Jersey, or maybe to El Paso, Texas. We never knew because all the trips were different. And you flew with different people. So maybe there was four or five people in a group. Maybe you go by yourself. Every day was different. That was kind of the charm of it for me.
How many times would you have to stop and fuel between New Jersey and Texas?
We would fly between 1 and 2 hours at a time. You know, any longer than that, it was exhausting. You have to have eyes all the way around your head, they told us. Watch your instruments, watch the air around you all the time.
And no autopilot.
No autopilots. And we didn't have that much gas in there anyway. It would take about 10 hours to take a P-51 across the country. So we wanted to stop often.
Wasn't there constant pressure on your legs, though?
It wasn't physical pressure that way. In fact, I fell asleep one time. Don't tell anybody. But it was just having to stay alert, and that's pretty tiring.
Wait, you fell asleep? I want to hear about that.
What can you say about falling asleep except you wake up and wonder what the rest of your group is doing way over there? Well, what happened was this was after the war, and we were ferrying some private airplanes from Durant, Oklahoma, out to Almonte, California. And somebody got the bright idea that when we got there, instead of waiting until afternoon to take off, we would take off early in the morning, and that way we could get back in 2 days instead of three. We thought that would be neat. Well, it wasn't so neat. How we got there was in a travel bureau car. And of course, we were driving like all night, so we were pretty tired when we got there. Tried a catnap in the car, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But at any rate, as soon as we got there, which was just about daybreak, we decided to take off and go. We were going to go as far as we could that day. And it was at the end of that day that I got drunk. I'm flying right into the sun, which is hotter than your eyes anyway, and I got extremely sleepy. The next thing I know, I was way off to one side. And what woke me up was the fact that the nose would go down and then the engine would go faster. That would bring it back up. And it would go up until it would kind of lose speed and go back down. You don't drop out of the sky. It just goes like that. And after a little while, I woke up. We never did that again.
Well, I'm always amazed when I see the pictures of a P-51, that they're much bigger than...
They are. And they're higher off the ground.
We see them in old movies and mm-hmm. you know, those kinds of images, and you never really get a sense of the size of them. When I see pictures of you, I think there's one of you sitting on a wing or nearby. Mm-hmm. And the thing looks big. It's a big aircraft.
Big one. Like the P-47 was 8 tons. It was a big airplane. It was high off the ground.
So when you were flying those kind of things, you told me one time, I think, that you were more or less the quality control people. In other words, nobody had flown them.
That's kind of a myth that they've carried on, that we were the first ones to fly it, but... No, they were checked out at the factory by test pilots there. So they had at least a half hour in the air before we got to fly them.
But you had trouble with them?
I never did, except that gas leak. But that was not a new airplane.
Tell me the story.
Went down there to pick up two P-47s. I was supposed to take it to El Paso. And I went to take off, and I noticed a strong odor of gasoline. But I thought they had just refueled, so what, you know, what could you expect? But it got worse, and I was taxiing out. And then when I turned around to take off, it got so bad I had to open the canopy. And then I noticed my feet were wet. Gas was pouring right into the cockpit. So I wasn't high enough to jump. I thought about it. I got my hand on the hatch and started to rack it back, and I looked at the altimeter, and I thought, no. So I called the tower and asked if I could turn around and come right back in. So they said yes, and get it off the runway as soon as you can. I suppose they didn't want any, you know, bonfires in the middle of their working runway. But anyway, I turned around and landed it and pulled it off in the grass and jumped out and ran out the wing, jumped off, and it was still going. But the fire trucks are right there, and they got it all covered with foam, and that was the end of it. So,
it was just a fuel line that was off? It's amazing it would
run. No, they left a gasket off underneath the gas cap when they were putting the airplane back together. It had been in mothballs, and they didn't do a very good job reassembling. They said they were going to clean it up, but did I want to take it out that afternoon? I said, no. I don't want to see that airplane again. So they had another one, which, you know, I was taking a chance, but I didn't have any trouble with that one.
Didn't you tell me one time that you had to land one, ran out of fuel? Was that part of the WASP thing?
I never ran out of fuel. The engine just quit, and it was because a piece of sand or something got into the carburetor. So it quit. It might just well run out of gas. That was my cartwheel.
What happened?
I didn't have any power, but I had a nice field that I was going into.
Was it just a field you picked, or you near an airstrip?
The one I picked, it was an old cornfield. And I was pretty well lined up, and a gust caught me. It just flipped me up this way. Then I hit the wing, the nose, the wing, and the tail, like that. I didn't get hurt, but didn't do the airplane any good. And I didn't lose my job. <That's good. laughs> The two things I was worried about.
Well, which way did you land, on your top?
It finally fell back on its right side up. It almost went all the way over, but not quite. That was a Luscom. That was after the war. And I was able to get out all right and wave to my buddy, so I was all right.
Did you have a lot of weather when you were flying?
We did. We did, and that was the reason that I wound up on my back in that AT-6 or AT-16. They call it the lake. I've forgotten the word now. It was the wind that blew off of Lake Erie.
Lake effect.
Yes. Anyway, we went up to Canada and brought down these AT-16s. It's like the AT-6, but it's a Canadian version. This cold air that swept over Erie produced snowstorms where they weren't expected. I ran into one of those. Couldn't see where we were going. It was me and another girl. They had cleared us out of Montreal and told us we wouldn't have any trouble. So by the time we ran into it, it was more than halfway, so we couldn't go back. So the idea was to get on the ground.
What did you do?
Well, we were kind of circling.
And in a whiteout?
Almost. Occasionally it would open up, and you could see what was down there. And I saw an airport that I had gone over, or I should have gone over, but it didn't have a decent runway. It hadn't been plowed, except for a short strip. I could have landed on the highway, but that would have been against the rules altogether. Probably would have been safer, but then I would have had to answer to the authorities. So anyway, that's why I decided to try for the runway, or driveway, I guess you could call it. And I guess it was okay as long as I stayed on the strip, but then the wing caught a drift, and over on my back I went. And I got it pretty well slowed down before I went over, so I didn't get hurt.
What did your friend do?
I don't know what happened to her. I kept saying, where's the other airplane? They said, no other airplane. They thought I got hit on the head. But she landed at another field there in town, and she was okay. The airplane was okay. And there were two other girls who went down in the same storm. One of them did something to her airplane. I don't know. The other one was okay. So there was nothing big came out of it except a lot of messed up airplanes.
What happened? So then there you are at somewhere.
And well, they put me in the infirmary overnight just to check me out, but they let me go the next morning. I was okay. I had to get on a bus and go back to my base and face the inquiry. And they tried their best to blame it on me. Did I have an A66B computer with me? Yeah. It was in the bottom of my briefcase. a stupid place for a computer. Well, you don't do your computer while you're flying. You do any computing you've got to do before you leave the ground. And then he discovered that I didn't really know that the instruments were Canadian. So the gasoline was in liters or something instead of gallons. Anyway, they tried to blame it on that, but it didn't fly because if I was halfway there, I knew I didn't have enough gas to get back because I'd burned up half my gasoline.
What kind of a computer did they have in the Second World War?
It was just like a slide rule.
You could compute field of distance and all that.
To plot your course, factor in the wind to make sure that you've got enough fuel, all of that. Most of the time, we just drew a line on the map and followed the railroads.
I guess some of the women just didn't make it, got into accidents, or was there a lot of that?
We lost 38 girls various ways. I mean, engines would quit or collision. But the numbers weren't any different than they were for the men. I'm not talking about combat now. I'm talking about here in the country. So it was about even. Yeah, we lost 38 of them. Out of 1,074 graduated from the school.
Did the military show much appreciation for all this at the time?
The ones that showed the appreciation were the operations officers, the ones that had to deal with moving the airplanes. They appreciated us. The rest of them just wondered what we were doing there. You know, when they decided to send a group of the girls to their training command, a lot of times the CO there didn't know they were coming, didn't ask for them, didn't know what to do with them. And Corcoran would send somebody or would go and tell them, find them something to fly. Sweetwater was turning out more and more pilots, so she had to find places for them. And I think that's where she got the idea that she'd like to have a separate branch of the service just for the women pilots. Well, there weren't enough of us. So that fell through. Nobody bought it. And they said, well, you can join the WAC if you want and be a flying branch of that. And she said, no. Once we got in there, what's to stop them from turning us into clerk typists or somebody to peel potatoes? She didn't want to lose control. So she said, no. And they said, well, it's that or nothing. So she said, it's nothing, then we're going home.
So
they didn't ask us. We wanted to stay. In fact, the girls at Long Beach and the girls at Wilmington all sent wires to the president and the press and the generals offering to continue to fly for $1 a year for as long as the need existed. They turned us down, of course, and so we didn't do that. But that's
why would they turn you down?
They just said, no, it's over with. You're out of here. So, okay. So we had the dubious distinction of being the first group, I guess, to be all done before the war was over.